sitting down with college football royalty, the Bowden dynasty, legendary head coach Bobby Bowden, his wife Ann, Tommy Bowden, former Tulane and Clemson coach, current Akron and former Auburn coach Terry Bowden, former offensive coordinator for Florida State and current special teams, and wide receiver coach of Akron, Jeff. Gentlemen, family, it's an honor to be here with you today. Talk to me about when you think about your career, not only for yourself, but as a family. 631 career wins, 14 conference championships, 2 national championships, 3 undefeated seasons. A great success on and off the field, but what does it mean to you to see not only the success for yourself, but your sons?
Well, that's what you're in it for. You're in it for no other reason except to win. You know, football is really fun if you win. If you know it ain't no fun. And so, number one, when they were coming up, I knew they were all showing a great interest in football. And I didn't want them to go into it. Number one, I didn't want to compete with them. You know, and then I didn't want them to compete against each other in a profession which I'm familiar with, you know. But I also felt like if that's what they wanted to do, they got to do it. You know, that's where they felt. So they went into coaching.
When you look at your career as a whole and what you were able to do in bringing Florida State to prominence, talk to me about that and the hard work that it took to get the program to where it is even today.
Yeah. It was like finding a buried treasure. You know, here I am coaching at West Virginia University. We were doing pretty good. We were going to bowl every other year and winning more than we lost. You know.
And then Florida State called and said they were looking for a head coach. Well, Ann and I had coached there for 3 years, so we're very familiar with Florida State. We really liked it. We liked Florida because we were raised in Alabama, coached in Georgia. You know, that's our home, you know. So at the last moment, we decided to go home. That's exactly the way we approached that job. Let's go home, and we did. My mother was still living. Her mother was still living. We'd lost our dads, you know. So we were able to spend the last 10 years of our life with our mothers and get back close to our family.
You talk about behind every successful man is a great woman, and then obviously your wife of 67 years, 48 in football. Talk to me about the bond between you and Ann and how that played a part in success on and off the field.
Well, it was a bond. I never made a move without her approval. You know, I don't think I could have. Little do they know. Any time I approached a new job, it was always with her first. And she was always supportive. You know, some wives and husbands would have a hard time getting along because she wouldn't want to go. She don't want to go to this town or that town, you know. And he did, so might cause a problem. But Ann was always very, her final decision was always supportive of what I wanted to do.
When you look at your coaching career, the one thing that stands out for me is in terms of you were never afraid to take a risk. 1988, the punt of Ruski, I mean, you believed in your players.
Yeah.
You believed enough to take a risk. And to me, that translated not just on the field, but off the field. And known as a player's coach. Talk to me about that and the relationship that you had with each and every player that came through your program.
Yeah. Well, I never went into a game without a trick play. I mean, when we got through playing a team on Saturday, as soon as Sunday rolled around, I got to find something I can pull on. Because they're better than us, and I got to do something to pull that game even. You know? So I would have some kind of a trick play. And I used a lot of them, and most of them were successful. Now, if they had been successful, who would have known I liked to run trick plays? But we were very successful. We ran a fake field goal one time for a touchdown. We ran another fake field goal for a touchdown. We ran another fake field goal for a touchdown. We ran a fake punt for a big first down, you know. And then, of course, the punt was 78 yards for but field goal, which enabled us to win the ball game. And so we had a lot of success with them. And I also had failures. It cost me a ball game against Auburn at the time. We had Auburn beat, man. You know, and we tried a trick play that we had tried the week before, and that was stupid. It's kind of like they don't. It's kind of like they don't have sense enough to look at film. And so we ran that same play against them. They were waiting on that thing, and it got it. Kicked the field goal piece. So anyway, some of them worked, and some of them didn't.
You talk about adversity. Obviously, the great games against Miami, the wide right.
Yeah.
And, you know, but that built your program. That built. That made you stronger coach. That made you a stronger team.
Yeah.
And talk about how those failures prepared you for success.
Well, it really did. It set up a scenery, which people liked.
In other words, the first one we had the best game I thought we ever played. We lost to them 26-25. We went for two and didn't make it. Now, if we would have went for one, I think we would have won the national championship, because I think we were one and they were two. That they beat us, so they ended up number one. We ended up number two. But when that game occurred, we had a big lead, and they got a lead in the last couple of minutes. Then we came back in the last minute and scored, and we're 1 point behind. So my team comes off the field there, no doubt what I'm going to do. I'm going to kick it at 20. You know, the odds on 3-point conversion are not good. So I get my kicking team and send them in. Well, when my boys came off the field, they looked at me like, "Coach, you're not going to go for it." You know, that's the feeling I got. "Coach, you're not going to go for it." You know, and I could sense that. So I called timeout, boy. I sent my first team offense back in there. I gave them a play. Well, what's the significance of that? The significance of that is the whole nation saw it. They all made comments on it. If you're a great team, you ought to go for the win. You know, and we did go for it, and we didn't make it. But
that's like Tom Osborne when he was at Nebraska.
Right.
Did the same thing. All he had to do was kick ass, won the national championship. No, he had to be brave. No, and go for it. Went for it and didn't get it. Like, it cost him a national championship.
Being the wife of a head coach, a legendary head coach, the ups, the downs, but through it all, it was the stability. 67 years of marriage. Talk to me about what that means for you and seeing not only the success of Bobby, but Terry, Jeff, and Tommy.
Well, you see what I got out of it. Plus one other girl and two girls.
Right.
So we had a great family, and I loved it.
As kids, I mean, your dad's a legend, and all great coaches, and Jeff, a great offensive coordinator, and a great coach. What is the one thing that you took from your father in terms of your coaching career, the one characteristic that you can say really translated into what you taught your players as coaches today?
Trick plays, you just talked about it. He just talked about it. I think I always took that a little bit, you know, because
Tommy used to do it all the time.
Yeah, but that's what you learned. You know, then when I first went to Clemson to play him, we didn't have quite the talent, so you had to do trick things. But that was one of the things, you know, from a coaching perspective. But probably one of the biggest thing I always took was the faith aspect. We had a lot of pressure, insecurity, volatility in the profession. And he had always made a statement that football was important, but it was not the most important. I think that helped us keep balance because of the pressures and the anxieties from the job. It helped us all keep balance. That's probably the top thing.
And I think the thing that I look back on now, because I'm still coaching, still trying to make my business in this trade. But I think if you're going to make it over a different decade, you've got to be willing to change and adapt. I think so many coaches today, they were wishbone quarterback coaches. And when the wishbone went out, they went out. Or they were eye formation coaches. But if you're going to stay in this business, you better be on the front end of change. I think that's the one thing as a graduate assistant, we all were graduate assistants for my father. We watched him change from an eye formation to the split back West Coast offense, to the four wide out, no huddle spread, to every different phase of the game. I remember once asking my dad, "What's your favorite offense?" He said, "I used to love the straight T, but then I liked the split T, then I liked the wing T. Then I like the eye, then I like the split, the West Coast, then I like the poor." You got to change, I guess, the ability to change and adapt. And I think that's the key that I've been able to take with me. If you're going to coach over the amount of 7 decades that he was a head coach from the 50s to 2010, you've got to be willing to be on the front end of a curve, not on the back end of a curve, and trying to still do the same thing.
And Joe, I thought this was...
a big lesson for me in coaching when I first went to FSU, because it was so different than coaches I had been around, and we had been together, but man, it was rough, it was cussing, it was all up their tail and this and that. And then you go to FSU, I go there in 94, and it's about love and respect for each other and character. And, you know, if you have those things, you'll win. You'll become a team, which is so huge to winning.
Yeah.
That is a great lesson for me.
And that's what I look at when I look at your career as a whole. I mean, I feel like you were ahead of the time, because we see in 1993, you took a quarterback in Charlie Ward.
Yeah.
You spread everybody out, and you won a national championship. And here we are 23 years later, and the spread offense is taking college football by storm.
Yeah.
Talk to me a little bit about that. I mean, to really evolve the sport the way you did it.
Yeah.
I mean, years prior, I mean, how does that make you feel?
Gus Malzahn brought it to my attention when he played Florida State for the national championship. He scored about 12 seconds too early. Remember, gave off an attention. Right. And I introduced him to banquet. And he told me, he said, where he got the idea of the full speed pro type offense, no huddle, was, he said, from China Ward. He said, so when China Ward was running at Florida State. And we did. We used to call it the fast break. Let's go to the fast break, which means let's go fast as we can go. You know, and we did those things back in those days. And boy, we were having success. We put it on the lineup against us. You know, we didn't realize that we had some. We had some. We stayed with it for a while, too, all the way up through Chris Weeking. You know, we went undefeated.
And you think about three undefeated seasons. I mean, not just you, Bobby, in 1999, but
yeah.
Terry in 93,
yeah.
Tommy in 98. I mean, that's unprecedented when you think about a family.
I mean,
that probably never happened again in college football, but I mean, how does that make you feel as a family? It's trickled down to your sons. I mean,
I got a complex. He wins one first-year coaching. First-year coach, I was a dadgum dad. Oh, he's undefeated. Undefeated. Tommy, about the third or fourth year, undefeated. In the second year,
yeah,
that's right. It makes me mad. Okay, so, but he goes undefeated. I'm 60 years old before I ever go undefeated.
Well, Florida State played some tough games back in the day.
I remember games
against Auburn.
Our rivalry with Auburn and Florida, but the big one was right there in Miami. I mean, if we could have beat Miami, Jeffrey, we set up field goals. Jeffrey's coaching our offense. We scored 27 points. We have 27-14. Now, okay, with 10 minutes left, we're going to have this thing. They broke two long ones. They broke two long ones. Went ahead of us 28-27. Who are they going to blame? They're going to blame the damn young offensive coordinator. They're going to do it every time. That's the way they are. And, and then on top of that, they go ahead of us with a minute to go. We take the ball and drive it 60 yards for a 38-yard field goal. And that's an extra point. That's a gimme. And we missed, you know. So we got a fire. We had to do it. That's the way it was. That's the way it is. We learned to be tough. They learned to be tough. They had to go through that. They have to go through the fire to get the toughness it takes to be a winning coach.
I've heard Terry speak a lot, and I heard the story about the coffee and what you learned from your father, the work ethic. And is there a story that you want to share that maybe isn't the national championships, isn't the prestige? Is there a story that really epitomized your coaching career that you sat back and you said, wow, this is what it's all about?
I'm sure there were a lot of instances where that would be true. You know, this is what it's all about. You know. But being able to coach with my sons was my favorite part. That was my favorite part. Coaching with Tommy, Coach Terry, Coach with Jeffrey, even my son-in-law, my daughter, oldest daughter's husband, he's a good football coach. He coached at Clemson, also coached at Auburn. You know, and being with them was probably the greatest of all my coaching career, being with my boys. And I count my son-in-law as my boys.
Right.
It's not just your family, but it's former coaches like Mark Richt, like Chuck Amato, who's with Terry now, defensive coordinator. Mickey Andrews, the former defensive coordinator. Talk about the relationships that you've had with former coaches, and not just on your staff, but guys like Lou Holtz.
Yeah, we're about as much of a family as you could put together. I mean, with my sons being in there, and then Lou Holtz was one of my favorites. I met Lou when he was a graduate assistant at Iowa. He was a nobody. But when I met him and kind of started dealing with him, I could see something special in Lou. I don't know if you've ever heard him speak, but you've never heard a better speaker. Whoever you heard, you have not heard him, but he's the best speaker I've ever heard. And so I had the privilege of playing against him 5 or 6 times. And it was an experience. I always thought he was, I can't think of the right term, but he might be shrewd. I think he might be the shrewdest coach I ever coached his boy. I mean, you better have it all tied together, or he's gonna find that way to beat you, you know?
Right. Do you, as children, have any stories that you want to share about growing up? I know you mentioned the coffee and, when you got back into coaching, about how you wanted the work ethic. Talk to me about a story that you might want to share about what epitomizes both your mom and dad.
They got their work in me.
No, we got leanness from you.
Oh, yeah.
We got leanness from you.
The toughness.
Tough difference between tough and stuff.
I got my feelings hurt yesterday. We went by the doctor to get him checked out to see if he could come up here. He had a waxing, as you can tell. I was going to tell everybody I won that fight. But,
We went to the doctor yesterday. Was it yesterday?
Yeah. He wasn't supposed yesterday. To come up here.
The doctor did not want me to come up here. He was scared to death. Because I went to the hospital 4 days.
Right.
I got out and started exercising. Back to the hospital 4 more days. So he did not want me to go. He said, you're just going to stay. They're going to keep you too busy, you know?
And so Ann was there. Tom, you weren't with us.
Yeah, me and Robin.
You weren't there, were you?
I was in just me and Robin.
You and Robin. Everybody wanted me to say, not go. Don't go. Doctor said, don't go. And I had to look him right in the eye and tell him I was going to go anyway. I hate to do that because he's always been.
But I wanted you to go, and that's why he accused me of being a little pushy. Or not really. He said, you're a little pushy.
She went. I came up here yesterday with a 1-1 to 8 vote.
I got one. You see, I usually win these fights.
You have a movie coming out. It's on January. It epitomizes the dynasty between you and your son. So talk to me a little bit about that and how that makes you feel. Because I mean,
I'll tell you what, it makes me feel good. When John came to me with John Corey. He's a Florida State graduate. He was at Florida State during the dynasty. He's produced quite a few productions and they've all been real successful. So when he said, I want to do one on the Bible dynasty, I said, okay, nice try. I said, okay, good try. You know, my thoughts would be like yours or yours. Well, how come you want to do it on me? You know, there's nothing exciting out there. You know, I didn't ever rob a bank. I should have robbed a bank. They love me. But anyway, I told him he could go ahead and do it. And so he put it together. And we had the first show and I saw, I really liked it. And I said, my thoughts were, I don't want it to make me look like a hero. I want it to make God look like a hero. You know, I want to glorify God. If I can do that, my life has been worth it. You know, and that's exactly what he did. he did a good job of putting that note back together. I'm really proud of him.
I saw that faith plays an important part, especially in your coaching career and now since you stopped coaching.
Yeah.
And there was a time in the beginning when you were sick and you spoke to God and you said that if you were able to be healed, that you would dedicate your life to Him. Talk a little bit about that.
Yeah. Well, number one, I was raised with that foundation. Had a mother, had a dad, and a sister. The mother and dad were godly people, and they loved Jesus. They loved the church. They made sure that me and Rock, my sister, we went to church every Sunday. Every Sunday night, every Sunday, every Wednesday, every time doors were open, they wanted us there. And we were there. I didn't want to be there. I'd rather be home playing around, you know. But anyway, I was there. And so as I look back at my life, that's the luckiest thing that ever happened to me, to have parents like that, you know what? Because I learned so much by reading the Bible, which is God's Word, and then praying, which is me talking to Him. You know? And so that really shaped my life.
And you talk about taking your faith and mentoring younger student athletes. One of your student athletes today is going to be honored in the College Football Hall of Fame, Derrick Brooks.
Yeah.
Talk to me a little bit about Derrick's performance on and off the field and what he meant to your program.
Derrick. I had Derrick Brooks, and also had some others like him. But I could use him as an example and never be wrong. Because he was a boy that was raised, I'm not sure if he had a dad. Yeah, he might have had a dad, but he wasn't in the home. And his mother trusted me to raise her son, you know. And out of all the boys I coached, you couldn't hardly pick out a better example of a young man that you'd like your son to be like. And I used to get a lot of phone calls when I was coaching, and when my name was out front. Coach Bowden, I've got a 15-year-old son, and he doesn't have a dad. And what can I tell him to help make him successful? What can I tell him to help make him successful? I tell them all the same thing. I said, you tell him one to get his priorities in order. Remember, you don't have a dad. You got a sweet mom, you know. And they didn't have a dad hammering on him about obeying the laws. So that's the thing that's missing today, son.
Dad is,
you know, those boys need somebody to tell them what to do. So anyway, I used to always talk to my coaches about being a father to these boys. We got to be the dad, because you might be the only thing he ever sees like a dad, you know. And so that was always big in our program.
And all of your programs, talk to me about what that means for all of you in terms of mentoring student athletes and how it translates to adults on and off the field.
They say the most influential parents are same-sex parents. And like you said, this family now is a little more dysfunctional than it was
right
20, 30 years ago. And you do have a responsibility from the influence standpoint. I think it was Billy Graham said that a coach will influence more people in a year than a normal person will in a lifetime, or more people in a year than most people in a lifetime. And you understand the significance of your position and influence you can have. And so you better make sure it's the right kind of influence. And I think we all understood that responsibility.
Do you have a moment in all of your coaching careers that stands out for you? Obviously, the perfect seasons, but does one really stand out above the rest that, like your dad, that you can say, this is why I got involved in coaching, this is why I do it?
Yeah, I had one out of Terry and Jeff's year. I had a young man I signed from Louisiana, a really good running back. When I went to Clemson, I was at Tulane, so I still recruited. So I took him up to Clemson. And he wasn't a real good student, single parent, didn't have a really strong home environment about study skills and time management skills and all that. But he was a hard worker, had a lot of pride in what he did. Brought him up and tested him, had reading specialists and learning specialists, tested out about a fifth grade reading level. Started him a class, and I got an email from a teacher about the first 6 months. Said, he shouldn't be here, this kind of guy. The college is not for these type of guys. He'll never graduate. He will never succeed. But he was a guy that would go to study hall, go to tutor, sit in the front row, and do his assignment, tried really hard, redshirted him, And so I kept that letter. I put it in a file. And four and a half years later, he was MVP of the Chick-fil-A Bowl, set a rushing record, graduated 2 or 3 months later. And I called him in. I said, come on, I'll show you something. I took that letter out, showed it to him, and he cried. It was a very, it was a pretty emotional time. But those are the times that where you see people rewarded that most people would have normally have given up on, and people told him you can't do it. And he's a very productive guy today.
And we all probably have.
Oh yeah, that's just like
hell. Remember Bob Gresham?
Yeah.
Bob, I tried to get him a job at dropping English course. He was flunking the darn thing. The teacher said, you don't have a chance. I tried to get him to drop it. I can do it. I can do it. And then got his graduate. He not only passed that course, he graduated from West Virginia University. Mm-hmm. And I learned a big lesson that morning, you know. And they got so much more to offer than we realized.
I think the longer you coach, and I'm 60 now, I've been doing this for a long time too. You start coaching the children of dads that you coached. I've got a couple on my team right now that I coach their fathers.
And I remember when their fathers came into my office and they had gotten into trouble, and people say, well, what kind of guys are you doing? But you watch them grow and you watch them mature. And the biggest thing is when they bring their children back and then their children want to play for you. I think that's what we see now. I know I had a chance to go into broadcasting for 10 years and then made a decision to get back into coaching. And I know when I got back in, because of the lessons that I learned over the years, it's important to me that I share my faith. Every single player that's going to play for me, I'm going to share my faith. Right. They can have their own faith, they can have their own belief, but I ask them to seek and try to figure out the spiritual side of their life and make sure they address that. But it's one of those things that we learned from, I think, my father, is that we have a chance to be an example. To share our faith, to share the spiritual side of life with our players and watch them grow. I think of the one guy that Jeff and I both had when we started coaching together at Salem College. Jimbo Fisher was one of the first quarterback we ever signed out of high school. And we got him out of high school, and I can remember he played for us at Salem, then he played for us at Samford, then he coached with me at Auburn about 14 years. But now he's won national championships at Florida State. But you watch the nurturing, you watch the growth of all these young men like that. And I think that's what, when you see what they become as men and what you have a chance to help them do. I think that's what you, when you look back, it's so much more important than blocking and tackling or anything else that you might have taught.
I think, Terry started devotions at Akron maybe three years ago, which is something Dad has done at FSU since the late 80s. You started it every day. But we had a devotion, I don't know, middle of the season. And was talking about the relationships that coaches have with their players, the importance of them. And two of the characteristics of a great relationship is do they see that you care, and can they trust you? And when I go back through my time being around players, that's what they would say about him. They trusted him. They knew he cared about them. Caring doesn't mean you're always nice and you're not always kicking them in the butt.
Yeah.
It just, he cared, and they knew that. And for me to hear that from them meant a lot.
Yeah.
And so I've always just tried to carry that on a little bit as I go on and coach
you. You talk about the bowing bowls. I mean, to face your son in a game and vice versa, to face your dad. And I know your mom, I told you, I saw you with the Clemson side and the Florida State side.
I love that shirt.
But what did the obviously you were on.
I'm in his wheel.
Experience. I mean, the first time you're going up against your father in a game, I mean, you're telling your kids to win, and it's your dad who taught you everything, and vice versa. What is that?
The thing I remember about the first game is that, they were national champions. They were the undefeated number one in the nation. and I think we were leading at halftime 14-3. I think we took 14.
Yeah, but you used a fake punt.
Fake punt. The one you gave me back. But I remember going there at halftime, sitting as a player in his locker room. Norman told us, a player, there's a young, Terry and I, young graduate assistants for him, and his ability to motivate and get him back on track, get him focused.
Right.
And I just, to myself, oh, geez, we don't make him mad. And I came back and won the game, finished up undefeated.
Right.
But, and then the next 3 years, just beat me like a guy. I just killed him.
What's ironic is you look at college football today, the college football playoff.
Yeah.
If there was the college football playoff when you were coaching, yeah, you might have had 6 or 7 national championships. Because the schedule that you played at Florida State back in the day, yeah, you didn't fear anyone.
We were good in November. we were good in November. I mean, 1 year we lost the first game of the year, won the rest. Next year we lost the first 2, won the rest. And then we always ended up at the end beating somebody pretty good, you know. And so you're right. If we had the playoff back in those days, I think we would have qualified about 14 times. Would have qualified.
When you look at college football today, talk to me just your feelings about how you see the game changing. Not just from a player's perspective, but coaches today, in terms of what they have to deal with as student athletes.
It has changed, as we've done about it. Just like Terry said a while ago about, you've got to be willing to change, because football goes in cycles. You know, right now we're on an offensive cycle.
Our defense is going nuts.
I mean, games are 62-60.
Non-existent, right?
50-50. Defensive coach is going nuts, you know? Now, to me, they want to solve it. Now, I'm going to tell you how the best way for them to solve it. It's going to take a while for them to figure this out. You have to take those 210-pound linebackers out and put in a 190-pounder that can fly to cover man-on-man on those guys that are beating you out there in the flat all day long, you know? But anyway, the defense will come up with the answer to this thing.
About every 10 years, then the offense will create another cycle. And that's the way it goes. But right now, we are in an offensive cycle.
That's okay, though, as long as you don't get that big lineman that's got a lot of speed. He'll get you every time.
That's right.
Yeah. And unity, obviously, not from a coaching perspective and being Bobby's wife. So talk to me about the unity of your family and what it means for you.
Well, I've just always felt like I was a part of it, you know. Sometimes I had to just zip my lip and sit back because I have a tendency to want to, it's like the doctor said yesterday, I had a tendency to be a little pushy with them, you know. I like to be a part of it because I always felt like we were a team, you know, and I think my boys felt the same way. We were, our whole family was a team, but I was a team with him. You know, when God created Adam, he knew there was one thing missing. He needed a good helpmate and a woman, you know. Yeah. And I think that's true because I don't think a coach can be successful without a supportive wife.
You have to hide the playbook from her.
Did she draw it up things every now and then?
She'd ship them off to them. She'll take care of them, boys.
Yeah. I wanted them to win their share.
Yeah.
When you see your mom and dad being honored tonight at the College Football Hall of Fame, what does it mean to each of you? When you see them tonight and being honored for unity and success?
Well, I hear about strives to be the best. You know, it's unusual to have a member of your family be the best. And when we have Joe Turner, you can argue back and forth with Martin Luther King or whatever, but his name is going to be mentioned in the breath with a pair of Bryant, Alonzo Stagg, Pop Warner, New Rodney, Bobby Bowden, Jr. Hill. So that's not something a lot of children get to experience. We talk about the best in a chosen profession.
And I tell you, I found it's hard for a coach to be successful without a supportive wife.
Without a doubt.
You said that 3 times.
It is. It's true, though. We've seen it in our profession take place a lot of times.
And it's still going on today because you have current coach in the MAC conference here that's tearing it up.
Well, I mean, I think about gratitude, just how grateful I am.
Because in coaching football, there are going to be wins, there are going to be losses, there are going to be good times, there are going to be bad times. And somewhere along the line, if I had not had someone that I trusted and I knew cared about me, that showed me how to keep things in perspective. The football can, if you want to lose, just make football number one in life. Make it number one, and I guarantee you, somewhere the stress, somewhere it'll get you. You'll make a mistake. You won't be able to answer all the questions, and it'll get you. Just make football number one, and it'll be the sure way to make you unsuccessful. So I think as I'm grateful that I had someone that I could watch and try to emulate and understand the balance in life of football is just the opportunity we've been given, and there are so many other things that are so much more important in life than just what we do and the way we do our profession.
And maybe this just comes from growing up under them and seeing this from every aspect, from the best of the best to the worst of the worst, is just deserving. I've never felt that two people weren't more deserving from what I've seen growing up.
That's going to make you feel, that's fulfilled,
yeah,
as parents, right?
That's what you're there for.
It's great. It's been an honor today to really sit down with each and every one of you. I mean, I know Terry personally, but to sit down and share life experiences, it's been an honor today.
It's glad to talk to somebody that's interested and looking for reasons, you know.
Right.
But I think this is the important thing about coaching. I used to tell Terry hit on this while ago, when I used to speak to the National Coaches Convention, there'd be a couple thousand coaches in there all over the country. The first thing I tell them,
don't make football your God. Don't make football your God, because you're not going to win all your games. You're going to get embarrassed and humiliated, and you better stay humble, you know, because they think you're not going to win all your games. So don't make football your God, you know. Make God your God. Then make your wife your second God, you know, and then other people, honor them. Then somewhere down there, football comes in, way down there, you know. And if you want to be successful, you better get your priorities in order, you know.
Great insight.